Isn't the issue about having separate counsel more important if you're partitioning? If my spouse that's making the gift, it's already their separate property. They inherited it. They got it by gift. Why would they need to have separate counsel if that's the spouse that's making, that's setting up the slab?
I'll tell you my issue, and I don't have community property issues in Kentucky to worry about, but I worry about what do I do if they actually get divorced? What does my trust document say? Does it say that the spouse is still a beneficiary? Well, that's a thing. Now my client has made a gift to a spouse, also my client, that my spouse is going to hang on to in this trust, is still a beneficiary. If I cut them both out, which is my preference is to say, hey, we're doing this. It's a gift to the kids. Step one, are you happy making a gift to the kids? If you are, this is a trap door. If you wouldn't do it but for the trap door, well, that's an entirely different discussion, it seems to me. But if they're willing to make the gift, then okay, they get divorced, poof, you're both gone. And it's just for the kids. Now, as they're getting a divorce, it may mean we have to pull assets out to do stuff, et cetera. And if I do it that way, I'm not as worried about both lawyers, about having two lawyers. But if I'm not, I really am, at least for me, I'm fixing the rights of people. I'm not worried about the property interest side. I'm just worried that they're going to come back and say, I'm aggrieved, and I have no... You know, there's no downside to me suing Barry. You know, he kicks in a buck, it's a buck I don't have. That's what I worry about.
When you do partition, though, you know, my clients have scratched their heads about this. So you've got $24 million. We're going to partition it. So half is your spouse's and half is yours. Then you're going to give your half into this trust for your spouse and kids. And now of that $24 million, you have none. And your spouse has $12 million outright and $12 million in trust. That's a big deal.
Yeah, it is a big potential wealth shift.
And that spouse is going to look at the situation and say, hey, I think I'm now in stand-alone posture.
Yeah, absolutely. The donee spouse says, well, I didn't marry you for your money, but now that I have your money, I don't necessarily need to stay married to you.
Melissa, I understand your comment about, so why do you need for a representation by anybody other than the donor? But the attorney may be much more comfortable having frank discussions with just the donor and not the other spouse sitting there of the ramifications of doing this.
Yeah, I'm thinking when I only represent the donor spouse. I don't think they need to have their other spouse get counsel. It don't need to be advised.
Well, we're going to produce a separate property out of a partition of the community property.
That's different if there's a partition.
Yeah, but except the problem is, as a practical matter, the attorney has already been representing both spouses.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
No. I'm saying I've never represented both spouses.
I want to move on.
Yeah.
Paragraph B. Mr. Akers brought this to my attention, this De Matteo case. It's before the tax court now. The insured De Matteo makes gifts of family trust of one-half interest to two life insurance policies, and he brings in a life settlement company to provide evaluations. And the life settlement company comes up with some numbers, rather modest numbers. One policy, its current value is $7,500, and the other one $5,500, and he divides it in two. And the service says, no, look at the regulations. You're going to see that the only possible permissible way of valuing this is the interpolated term reserve value plus unearned premiums. And so the petitioner filed the tax court, wanted a motion for summary judgment that in effect said that's not the only exclusive. Read your regulations. What would a willing buyer pay for a willing to a willing seller, and so on? And we've got life settlement companies are willing buyers. Well, Judge Cohen granted a denied motion for summary judgment. It's going to go to trial next March. What do you find interesting about that case?
We probably should have Don tell talking us, to us about the valuation of life insurance policies. My understanding is that the interpolated terminal reserve value can be next to meaningless. You know, it can be very low. It can be extremely large. It seems to make sense to look at what a hypothetical purchaser would pay for that policy, even though that's not in the regulations. I find this case interesting. At this point, it's just a denial of taxpayers' motion for summary judgment that you shall use that settlement value. But this could be very important if we actually get a reported case on how we go about valuing life insurance policies.
The regulations really are, when the decedent dies owning insurance in someone else, here's how you value that policy in the decedent's estate. Hmm. It doesn't really, I mean, why would you need a regulation to tell you how to value life on the decedent in the decedent's estate, right? I mean, because we know what the death benefit is. Well, there's not really a gift tax regulation telling you to use interpolated terminal reserve value. It's much murkier than that. I was an expert in a case up in Dallas where the lawyer was sued because he didn't force his client to sell a policy to a defective trust. The client foolishly gave the policy to the trust and then even more foolishly died within 3 years. And they sued the lawyer for malpractice. Why didn't you wrestle the client to the ground and make him sell it to the trust? And I said, well, one of the problems is when you sell the policy to the trust, it has to be full and adequate consideration, and I can't figure out what the heck that is. Go read Don's outline.